Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio inside Max 6 Workspace and the Conscious Capitalism Arizona headquarters in Tempe, Arizona, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm Karen Nowicki, and I'm very excited. I feel like it's old home day or something like that. I feel like we've become fast friends, and I know our paths have crossed before. I'm very excited to introduce you to the Rekla Group, right? I said that correctly. Corporate Counterintelligence. Now, if that is not an exciting title, I don't know what is. So we'll get into that in just a moment. Let me introduce you, please, the Rekla family and team. Justin, COO. Welcome, sir.
Thanks for having us.
And Tonya Don Rekla, CEO.
Hello, thank you.
And Neva Lee Rekla, CFO, but that stands for what?
That stands for...
The Chief
of Fun.
Yes.
I was close.
Hey, that'll work. Chief of Fun. But I know you dabble in finances as well, so we can say CFO for financial, but we can also say Chief of Fun. I love it. Well, welcome to Phoenix Business Radio. Let's talk about who the Rekla Group is. Who do you serve? What's your mission? And then we'll talk about the backstory and how we've got this amazing kiddo on your team. Who'd like to start for us?
Well, Tony and I are both former counterintelligence agents with the U.S. government. And we left government back in 2011. We got bit by the entrepreneur bug, went to set out and figure our place in the world. And the path that we started on wasn't quite where we ended up, which is for the better, because when we entered into the market space, trying to figure out what we could bring to the world, the market found us, and they told us, they basically said, we need you to do for us in business what you did for the government.
And you listened? How amazing.
No, we didn't. God's,
put on the skids and
God taps people on the shoulder sometimes, and other times he hits them over the head. And
even after hitting on the head, you still weren't listening.
Well, it was funny because when we set to figure this out for ourselves and how we can translate those skill sets, we thought we knew better, right? And when it finally got to the point where we weren't listening anymore, the universe said, boop. And I ended up in Afghanistan for six months. And basically told Tonya, I'm going to need you to figure out this business stuff so I can come home. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to need you to
watch the
2-year-old at the time and make this happen. And she did. About 6 months. She dove fully in, and next thing I know, I come home, and we're teaching at events, we're speaking at events, and she was able to translate everything that we had done in the counterintel world and repurpose it for the business world. And ultimately what that is we realized that small business owners, medium-sized businesses, emerging growth businesses can't do what they're here to do and have the impact on the world that they're here to have if they're getting ripped off, if they're getting scammed. And not only that, if they're, you know, really releasing their power to other people who think they know better about their, you know, our client's business. And so from that place, we've entered into corporate counterintelligence, and we offer risk mitigation and due diligence solutions for small businesses. So whether you're hiring an employee, a partner, you're going into a merger and acquisition, you're bringing on a service provider. That's one of the biggest areas that we see is that scams and frauds aren't necessarily the scams or frauds, but it's ineptitude, mm-hmm. or it's their ability, it's a business's or a service's ability to actually be able to deliver on what it says they say they can do. And intrinsically, most business owners know these things, but they don't have the process in place to help them discern what they don't know and what it is what they do know, because they think they're making a decision from one place, but they're really making it from another, and they're abdicating their power along the way. Well, we come in, we fill that gap. And from that, our other businesses were born because we found out along the way that a lot of people didn't really need due diligence. They just needed to get out of their own damn way. And from that, Superpower Experts, our other company, was born.
That's why you said that on the way in. Yeah. I understood what you were saying, but I didn't make the reference to another business as well.
Yeah. We broke all the rules. So really the Rekla Group, the counterintelligence firm, was the entry point. But what happened with that was we ended up having to knock ourselves off and build scalable and affordable solutions for the startups. I mean, our heart and souls are with entrepreneurs, and not everyone was positioned to utilize our consulting services, and it didn't feel good to not have anywhere to send them. And so we challenged ourselves to see if we couldn't come up with some scalable solutions, and we did. And but along the way, what Justin's alluding to is that we ended up starting to like really help people more personal kind of development type stuff. And we had to make a decision about whether to muddy the brand, you know, and to absorb it all or to separate them. And so, you know, we were like, oh, let's separate and we can have multiple companies. Like, that's really brilliant when you have a 2-year-old and, you know, why not? We could do everything. Right. And then she's starting up her businesses and everything else. And we many, many times along the way, we've looked at each other and said, how do we do this? Like, how do we keep doing this? And we very much operate on faith and intuitively. And we just kept asking and we just kept hearing like, no, you have to keep going. Just keep going. You'll be supported. You'll have the resources. Like, these are both really, really viable solutions that the world needs right now. You have to keep going. And there were many tough moments.
And we went from me being in Afghanistan for 6 months, not knowing a whole lot about business and figuring it out, to we now have, I don't know, 4 businesses that we're growing, 2 of them that are in 6 figures, and we employ 42 people. So the military side of the house of knowing processes and systems.
Project management is everything. Yeah, so. It really is everything. Yeah. Whether you're training for a marathon or you're preparing for a wedding or you're building a business, if you can subscribe to some form of project management, and there's a variety, right? You're golden, because you've got to say, this is our goal. This is where we're headed. Right. These are our checkpoints, our milestones along the way. Here's the measure that we're going to use to see how we're getting there, right? I'm talking very obviously vaguely. I know this is one of your, you know, zone of genius, but it's fascinating to me how many business owners get into a business, an entrepreneur, because they have a passion and a mission for something. They can do great things, but they can't get out of their own way, to your point. And so you saw that, right? You saw that, hey, what we can offer around this due diligence and some of this is not really for everybody, but people are asking you because they know, like, and trust you for some of that guidance. Mm-hmm. Well, why not build a business around that? So take us back to while he's in Afghanistan and you've got a 2-year-old. Were you working at the time? Were you still with the government? Mm-hmm. Or what was going on for you? And when he makes that call and says, hey, sweetie, I got to come home and this is what it's going to look like. And here you go. I'm exaggerating. Yeah. Maybe not.
No, it's not much of an exaggeration. No, I had left. We had a really pivotal moment. So everybody, you know, everybody's very curious about how this happens, right? How all this works. And our best explanation is it was the perfect storm. But Justin and I had, well, let me back up a second. The quest, if you will, like the seeking aspect in me, was constantly looking for what early on I thought it was the perfect job, right? Once I had the perfect job, then I would know who I was and I'd be satisfied and all this. I wasn't married, didn't have kids at the time. And that's when I became a special agent for the U.S. government, right? And that's a pretty kick-ass job. Like, it's like, I mean, and there were moments where I was like,
doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm getting paid to do this. But so there was fun in it. It was amazing. I can't possibly overstate the impact that had on my existence. But at the end of the day, it was still a job. Mm-hmm. And so there was still very like, it became very obvious that that wasn't what I was really seeking. Right. And I didn't know at the time, I didn't know that there was like this, you know, kind of hole inside of me that I was wanting to fill with completeness and wholeness and tapping into my own kind of brilliance and divinity and connecting into that space. And connecting them with others in that space. Like, you couldn't have told me that's what I was looking for. But from that place, you know, we had some pretty cool jobs. And when we left, when we made the decision to leave, we looked at each other and said, you know, we're not going to build a new job for ourselves, right? If we want a good job, we had a good job, and it was really easy to have a good job, right? This is different. This is not easy. This is hard. Like, we're having to train ourselves. We're having to do things that we never dreamt possible. But we made the decision then not to do business unless Neva could be involved. Mm-hmm. And people told us we were crazy. They told us it couldn't be done. They told us it was nuts. We turned down business. But it made all the difference because we didn't know. We weren't consciously aware at the time. But what it did was it dictated the environments that we found ourselves in. So we didn't want environments that would just tolerate her. We wanted ones that would uplift her and would welcome her. Well, if an environment has the confidence to welcome children into it, they know what they're doing, right? And it informs that heart-centric kind of conscious perspective. Well, we didn't know that that was being infused into us until we kind of looked up and went, this is different than what we had seen before in business. And it felt really good. And so we built all of our companies based on this kind of cooperation, collaboration. CEO Space International, it gets a lot of credit for that because it too, that's where we went. Yeah. And so she's been raised in an environment that tells her she can do it.
And now she speaks on their stage.
She speaks on their stage.
Really?
You know, yeah. 6 years after her entry into business, she was doing a keynote in front of 2,000 people.
What?
You know, so it's like, it is possible.
Yeah.
But you have to really
be willing.
It's more
than possible.
It is. It's like you have to be willing to have the courage to say, you know what? I think we know better. And that's a big part of what we teach people in due diligence. Like, you are the expert in your business. Absolutely, you need guidance from other people, but do not abdicate that position for anything.
Yeah, well, and it's different from, you know, abdicating to, you know, a lot of people are like, well, aren't we abdicating to you? No, because you've recognized that you need due diligence, and our firm is able to provide a perspective that's got no emotional attachment and all the internal stuff that we make decisions from to it. And we're able to present information from this place rather than the emotional involvement piece or the application piece, so the CEO can make a smart, educated decision for themselves.
But that's true in the superpower personal
Absolutely.
Development space too. That's the same approach
so
we take.
Speak to that business. That's one of your businesses.
It is.
That's her baby.
It was our accidental business a little bit. That was one of those God whispering to you and then refusing. So I have a history of refusing these moments. I tend to drag my feet more than he. I mean, if he had had his way, we would have run a lot faster than we did. I'm kind of the foundation systems process builder. And so I'm constantly like, hey, whoa, buddy.
That's good, though.
Whoa,
it's a perfect match, right?
We have the perfect storm for sure.
Yeah.
Like, I would say we couldn't have designed it, but I'm pretty sure we did design it.
Right.
So, you know, not human us, right, of course. But Superpower Experts birthed out of this, what we were seeing in the due diligence and why business wasn't working. It wasn't the businessy aspects. Like, business is boring, right? Your work can be fun and enjoyable and enlightening, but business should be pretty formulaic. Like, if this, then, like you were talking about, it's ba-bom, 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 right? And most people don't want to face that, especially entrepreneurs who are visionaries. But it is pretty boring from that perspective. And it's easy to get to forget that and to get caught up in the passion and the influence, especially with social media and stuff these days. And so when I started working with our clients from the due diligence sector on more of the personal stuff, in no way, shape, or form did I have any desire to be a coach or even anywhere resembling a coach. But what happened was people kept telling other people. And so they'd come to us and be like, I want to talk about your other business. And I'm like I'm in a back
like
room.
Like slipping you a note.
I know. It's like I have my crystal ball. Am I like, shh, you know, nobody knows. But they just kept referring. And so we had a really successful corporate counterintelligence firm. The next thing I know, I've got this very successful coaching practice. And I'm like, this was not my intention. Like, I don't know what's happening here, but it was working. And so I just kind of kept in prayer about it. Like, what do we do here? And all I heard was, you have to get everybody to work together. You have to bring people into the same conversation. And then there was a series of guidelines after that, which was like, you know, everybody has to be able to evolve. Like, the organization has to be able to evolve. Like, I was getting guidance about what an organic kind of growth model would look like, what a hybrid model can look like, what a blue ocean strategy and a holocratic organizational structure, like, different, right? And I kept saying, no thanks. Like, I don't really play well with others, not interested, you know? And if, you know, we all know what happens when you do that. And so it just kept like nudging and pushing and shoving. And then all of a sudden I'm falling off a cliff. And it's like, all right, fine, I'll do this thing. And I just started like really stepping into it. And it became this kind of international personal development platform. We have 9 podcast shows all in the superpower high vibrational space. But what I'm most proud of is we created a collaborative model, and we tried and failed and tried and failed and tried and failed many times. In fact, I even wrote an article called "Do You Suffer from Premature Collaboration?"
Yes,
it's a little bit racy.
It's a little edgy.
There's a little edginess to it.
Dick, but Peter, and Gina.
are the characters. So you can fill in the blanks for the rest of it.
Wait,
but
premature. Do you suffer from premature collaboration? I have to read that before I speak for startup week. I have a sense that we're speaking a very similar language.
I know we are. And some of it comes from the due diligence perspective, moving into agreements before you really know somebody. But a lot of it comes from this like just desire to like, oh, great, save me. Come help me with my bro. They're going to help me build this thing. And it's like, it's your work.
Yes.
You have to take ownership for that. And so, but not only that, we have a lot of really amazing people who are awakening to their gifts and they don't necessarily want to be business experts. I think it doesn't behoove our society to force them to be, but there's no place for them to do their work. A practitioner in an energetic healing space, in a coaching space, a consulting space doesn't have much of an option, and you're limited in how well you can scale your business if you're a solo practitioner. Not only that, but we're single-handedly taking down the personal brand kind of concept because I think that it's toxic. We believe that it's not achievable anymore. We think that people are setting a stage and setting people up for failure.
I agree.
It's creating broken marriages. It's creating broken families. We've seen people kill themselves over this. It is nuts.
So much of it is ego-driven and very narcissistic. And those terms very loosely, but I've seen it. It's
Well, the irony is we've seen the tidal wave of what the personal brand and the goal to reach that personal brand in the personal development arena is doing. It's literally, I mean, it's like it's so bloody in the personal development personal development industry that it's impossible to get ahead. And we see how it destroyed the chase of that personal brand is destroying all the coaches that are professing to be change your life. When you, from the due diligence perspective, because when you take a peek behind the curtain, which we're experts at, right, to be able to dissect it, we know exactly what's happening. And a lot of it is because the coach is not doing it in partnership with their spouse. And so it's automatically creating the separation. And so when you can move into a collaborative environment, even in your own business with your spouse, and you're able to meet them in that space, even if they're not active in the business, but you're still meeting them in that space, the world changes. Mm-hmm. Everything changes.
Well, and I think we're not being honest about the whole personal brand conversation. And you know, we don't necessarily need to get off on that trajectory, but it's the personal brands come out of people doing their work. So the personal brands that have worked were a byproduct of people being in service to what they were passionate about. You don't create it. You know, this is, it's earned. You have to build, like you have to work at it. And then you're kind of knighted with it. It's not I'm going to go out and create this and convince everybody of my brilliance. And that's not a good strategy. And you're going to fail every time. And we're just done like entertaining that as an option. And so great, right? We can have our opinions, but if we're not willing to provide solutions, then we don't really get to sit and rant and rave about them. Right. And so we provided solutions and we created a space that we've been beta testing for a while. And it's this little kind of incubator petri dish model of a micro environment that allows for collaboration. So all of our coaching is done collaboratively. People are held accountable. They agree to, you know, grow transparently in the presence of others. They agree to continue training and they should. Like, you should not be turning your life over to a coach thinking that they can fix it for you. One, they can't. But two, you need to ask some of these questions like who holds you accountable? Who do you work with? Who supports you? How do you make sure your coffers are full? And people just aren't asking enough questions.
And I, from my own personal experience, before opening the studio, I had just sold a company with some partners and wish I had done some due diligence before getting involved. But anyway, it gave me the opportunity to open the studio and my husband his auto shop. And then I went to go hire a coach. So I am a certified integrative coach professional from John F. Kennedy University and Debbie Ford. And I only say that because it was born out of the desire to help people come within themselves and really understand their shadow side, given my experience. Mm. And I, like so many other coaches, got that certification, hung my shingle and went, I can fix everybody. No one needs to be fixed, right? Anyway, a lot of iterations of my career for the last 12 years. But when I sold the social media company, I knew that I needed to hire a coach. I felt like I needed to have a business guide in my life, because now I had succeeded in selling a very successful business, and I wanted to come back to growing my brand and my practice. I made the mistake, though. I thought I wanted to hear when I hired this person. I asked what I thought were all the right questions, but I was not asking the right questions, and I wasn't listening from a filter of who's keeping them accountable. What's their success rate? Have they worked with people like me before? And I'm guessing at some of these questions, I'm sure you'd have a boatload more. And I spent $15,000, and I probably got $1,000 worth.
Absolutely. And that's a very, very common story.
And those are the people that we serve when we knocked ourselves off, because oftentimes people are looking for how do I sort through that, right? But they didn't have the ability to bring us on as consultants, and so we duplicated ourselves. And that's what the Clear Directory and everything that we do through the Clear Directory serves, is providing solutions for exactly what you just described. So if you want to prevent that, come talk to us.
Before you make that commitment.
Oh, absolutely.
And then the agreement on her behalf was ironclad. And so I kept paying, and I was not getting, and my husband, of course, you can imagine, was like, and by the way, his phrase was, "You did it again," because I had done it previously in, you know, having left education and becoming an entrepreneur and business owner. I really listened to my callings. It's not always clear and concise, but kept fumbling my way until I found that.
Yeah. And I want to plus that a little bit, because a lot of people carry that story, and there is an element. I mean, it's undeniable that we walk our journeys. So the idea of, like, "You did it again," that's very common in spousal situations, because especially if one spouse is an entrepreneur or entrepreneur minded and the other one is a little bit more security, stability focused, that becomes a really easy blaming point. It's a toxic conversation in our collective consciousness. And so I invite you and everybody listening who's walked that path to reframe that and to say, you know what? Yes, for sure. We learn things. For sure, we step into things. And I would actually venture to say your guidance was probably extremely clear, because as I'm listening to you, you know, I have superpowers. That situation served a very important purpose for that coach, for you, for your husband. There's so many intricacies. We can never possibly understand all of the enmeshment that goes on. And if we don't take ownership and learn from it and apply what we're learning, then we are set to repeat it. But doing it once, and walking through it once, is a gift to the world. It's a gift to you, and it's a gift to everybody else. Staying in it, staying stuck in it, and wallowing in it, and being a victim to it, is toxic to the world. Totally different conversation. Let yourself walk through. Let yourself have those experiences. Refuse the desire to judge yourself because of it, and come out of it going, "And I get to speak about this now. I get to teach others. I get to do it better." Mm-hmm. And that changes everything.
Indeed, it does. Neva, you have something to say. I can see it. Is there something you want?
No, I'm making funny faces on my dad.
Just funny faces across the table.
She is the chief fun officer.
You are the chief fun officer. So I meant to ask this before we got on air, so I hope it's an appropriate question. Are you in school, or is life school for you? Like a traditional go to school, by mom and dad, hop on the bus?
I'm homeschooled. I have been for the past couple of years.
For the last five years.
Pretty much since birth.
And she did one day in school.
No. She did a semester at Montessori school when she was two.
Yep.
And you came home and said, "Mom, I want to learn from home now." And she was
I'm done.
Two.
Thank you. Yep.
Then I went into another school, and it was a multilingual school. I lasted a day and a half because I was like training to go to prison, pretty much. We sat in the parking lot the next day and had a conversation about how I'm not going back. I've been homeschooled ever since.
I love it. Love it. What for you, when you watch mom and dad do their thing, and maybe this isn't something that you even articulate or think about, but what is inspiring to you in being part of this family and this team?
Well, from watching them, I've seen that they've really, like, business, you can really make it your own. Like, it doesn't have to be just this sort of boring thing. You can really make it your own and make it into a part of your life and into a part of your learning and fun. And that's one of the things they've taught me.
I love that. And you said to me before we come on air, I'm not the average 8-year-old.
I'm not.
No. More. Dad said more like 30, but you said, no, 16. Give me my teen years, right?
Yes.
Very
yes.
good. And you have a book coming out. Can you tell us a little bit about the book and what that's been like to write that?
So the book is called When Pigs Fly, The Parent's Guide to Inspire Your Young Entrepreneur. It's coming out this year. It's been in the making for about a year and a half. So I started writing it when I was 7. It's a process, but I know it's definitely going to be worth it. And I'm very excited for it to come out because I want to show parents that they can teach their kids that business is a possibility and that it's okay to show them, even if they're like, I don't want to do it. Just to show them it's another thing they can do.
Yeah, even if they continue to have their maybe a corporate job or government or education, and they have kiddos that they want to grow up with an entrepreneur spirit, this would still be a good book for them, wouldn't it? Because it will open their mm-hmm. eyes to how to really think and behave and show up differently as a family.
Exactly.
I can't wait to read it. And now, this is your first book.
It is.
Have either of you written a book?
I have two. One's out. It's called War, Watch, Assess, React, The Ultimate Guide to Personal Power and Safety. And so it's a glimpse inside what my reality was as a female agent, kind of combining the situational awareness, self-awareness, spiritual awareness. I talk about a couple rape scenarios that I agreed to walk through this lifetime. One of them while I was on a national security mission, and it was by my teammate. And so you know, as you can imagine, walking through those sort of experiences in a state of awareness, maybe not so much the first time, but the second time for sure, and really having to reconcile that internally of what our agreements are and how we walk through things and what approaches. And it kind of speaks to what I was just alluding to, which is, you know, we have a choice in how we view everything that happens for us. And the conclusion I came to was, in all reality, these two fine gentlemen, you know, allowed me an opportunity to witness an aspect of myself. But ultimately, what I saw was that I was doing that to myself daily. And in every moment that I didn't say yes when I meant yes, or say no when I meant no, and laughed at silly jokes that I didn't agree with, and you know, said, okay, fine, I'll go to a movie when I really wanted to sit and read a book on the couch, you know, just really kind of owning that space. While it's easy to blame people for the big things, there was a series of minor behaviors that really led up to that. And I chose to take ownership of that, mostly because I feel like, you know, when you take ownership of it, you can change it. Like, maybe I'm wrong and maybe we're absolutely victims to everything and there's really nothing we can do. But yeah. I get to choose if I want to keep that mentality or not. And what we've seen is that you really do change your reality. You really do change what you're able to see and what you're able to create. And everybody's waiting for this kind of new world concept to kind of emerge in the personal development, spiritual growth, you know, spaces. But you have to create that. You have to willingly let reality as you know it fade from your eyes and build something new. It's both kind of unnerving and also, you know, really extremely exciting. But it starts with being able to look at scenarios like that and go, wait, is there a different perspective here? And that's what you were talking about earlier today. I think the real, real magic to what we've done here is we continually choose to opt out. We just get off the hamster wheel. So we don't do business the same way. We don't do family the same way.
We don't parent the same way.
We don't parent the same way. Mm-hmm. We don't live the same way. Every time we're up against something that's like, oh, wow, this feels kind of constricting. Like, do we have to keep it? Yes or no? Do we have to abide by it? Yes or no? Do we have another choice? Is there another way? And we just play in that real creative space. And it leads to opting out of a lot of things that people accept as normal and have-tos.
Well, and as you can imagine, just from the conversation here, the due diligence side of the house, it all comes back down to that personal ownership. And she is the byproduct of that environment.
Literally.
I mean, literally the byproduct. And you know, I jest with people, but she's my barometer. Neva Lee is my barometer, because it's one of those things to where I know that if I'm off or if I'm triggered, she immediately reflects it back to me, because we've taught her all of these tools and given her all these skill sets. And, you know, that's why she was able to do 200 readings at Burning Man and guiding adults and grown men in tears from the reading and insight that she was able to provide them, because she understands herself. She'll have revelations. She'll walk out in the front room. She's like, I need you to pause the movie. And she will say, I experienced this. And then she will literally spend the next 30 to 45 minutes. I think the longest she's gone, probably about an hour and a half.
Just ranting.
Deconstructing what she's just experienced. And when she gets to the other side of it, she goes, oh, and now I'm going to do a podcast on that. I'm going to do a video on that. And as a matter of fact, she's got a movie. Oh, you want to give them a quick sneak peek on what you just put together?
So I saw this video on Facebook, and it was a makeup video. And basically, the caption was that the girl was rated a zero without makeup, but somehow she was beautiful with makeup and was rated a 10. The thought that came to my mind was, what the heck? It's 2019 and people are still talking about rating people. And we sat down, had a 45-minute talk about it. I was like, what the heck? It's 2019. People are still judging people based on their beauty. And Mom suggested that I go talk to one of our friends. I was like, I want to do a video for
this. He's a movie producer.
And he's very good with that. So she's like, how about you talk with him? And so I got on a call with him, and it was probably about a couple of weeks in the making. And we just got done filming a video, and we had our friends write on poster board things that they've been judged on. Then there's a stop sign that says it stops here now, and all those words get crossed out.
I'm gonna step in here. So this doesn't actually frame it up perfectly. No.
I'm getting it, but yeah. Fill in the blanks for me.
Well, that she's spot on with. But our experience of it was, you know, she calls us. We're like, sure, go talk to Elmer. Go, you know, because she was in one of his films here recently. And so they had a few. We were aware that they'd had a few kind of video chats about it. And she came to us and she's like, hey, can we film at the house? I'm like, what are we filming at the house? Like, what's happening here? And so we just carved out a day. We're like, fine, whatever. Just go. Because we've taught her that, you know, you find the people who are good at what they do, right? The experts, and you work with them.
Let them do it.
And so she... the next thing, it was like 2 days before this date that we had chosen. And I looked at her and said, hey, whatever happened with that project? She's, well, we're filming. And I was like, who's we? 20 people are showing up at the house. And we're like,
we had no clue. Two days before. Like,
well, Mom and Dad got left off the email thread. But apparently this whole conversation had been happening.
She coordinated this entire event.
And 20 people showed up. 15, 20 people came to the house, a film crew, everything. And we're like,
lights. Our entire front room was, yeah.
I mean, it was so bizarre. But it was such a great experience for Justin and I, because it was like, she doesn't need us in that space. Like, certainly we hold the container, certainly we guide, certainly she can come back to us and stuff, but she did exactly what we encouraged her to do. And we're like, okay, just next time.
Yeah. Put us on the
put
email.
Put us on the email. That's all we need, right? Yeah. That's the only piece that we were missing.
Let the managers know that what you're doing.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we had blocked it off, though.
So have you it's seen, so the cool. video is out?
The video is not out yet. It needs music.
But are you loving it? You've seen the rough cut.
Yes, I have. And it is... very amazing. A friend actually had an idea to burn all those cards.
It sparked a whole, you can imagine.
Because we've seen those, yes. We've seen similar videos, right? Mm-hmm. But when you can bump it up a notch from the perspective and the soul that you have and be the one leading that whole amazing project, I also can't wait to see that.
Well, and I think it's perfect. And I love the fact that we can share that story here, because my suspicion is that people are going to see her book and really want to, in their minds, discredit and claim that she didn't do it. And I kind of wish we did record some of the sessions. I kind of wish we had videoed the book process, although I don't think I would have wanted those videos out there. There were some real heated moments between mom and daughter on that.
You think writing a book's difficult. Write it with a 9-year-old and allowing it.
Well, 7, 8, 9-year-old.
7, 8, 9-year-old and doing it in such a way that it's her.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really because some of the challenge with kids is that is the construct isn't present, right? So the brilliance, but they have to have a framework to put it into. And so there was a real delicate kind of art to creating the construct, but not encapsulating her within it. And so, for instance, on her podcast show, when she started doing her podcast show, she did it exactly the way I did mine, right? Because that was something she had seen. And initially, I was like, oh my gosh, she's just going to mimic me and da-da-da-da-da. And she, you know, it's her voice and this and that. We don't need a bunch of little mini Tonyas running around. Well, but when I relaxed and let her kind of be her and do what she wanted to do, she clearly started making it her own. Like her second interview was with J.P. Sears, and she, and I was sitting kind of in the background. She looks at me.
Oh, I know who he is.
Yeah, and she goes, she goes, Mom, can I do an Oracle card reading for J.P.? And this is on the video, right? And we don't really edit out. I mean, there it's real for us. And so, and I'm looking at her like, I guess that's up to him. Like, I don't know, you know. And so she did an Oracle card. Well, that led to Joe Polish wanting an Oracle card, and then Sean Stevenson wanting one. And so now it's kind of like become a thing. But then she started funny FaceTime, and I was like, you're going to do what? You know, and of course, I'm very proper. And,
Joe Polish, you know? Joe Polish had like 8 changes of garb. He had different costumes throughout the entire interview. It was amazing.
Probably
it was awesome.
Half the interview is us running off, getting changed.
Yeah, I'm like proofreading or watching the cue, seeing the video, and I'm like, where did you both go? Like, the video's blank. I'm like, she goes, oh, we were getting costumes. And we're like, oh, we just left it all in because it was just that perfect. Well, it's a great, and that's how the book formed out, right? You have to set, like, how do you tell a story? How do you, because, and that's something we work with as she's explaining things, like, give deep, bring somebody into that. Well, that's a learned thing to do, right? To communicate in that way. But to be able to do that and provide the construct without usurping it, mm-hmm. and being like, okay, but here are my words and this is how I'd want you to say it. And allowing my ego to be like, okay, time out. Like, let's foster this and mentor this versus trying to overlay it for, you know, our own kind of, oh my gosh, what are people going to think kind of thing, which we still do a little bit of, right? We haven't let her go totally unplugged yet, but the, or unfiltered. This child's
probably
brilliant.
Best.
Yeah. but that's why we implemented the strategy that we have. She rants and raves to us because we're big believers in taking responsibility for the information that you put out there. And I'll speak for me. I'm not a big fan of the whole like social media rant and rave thing. I much prefer people who've synthesized the material, who are sitting in a place of clarity around it and can afford that sort of a perspective. I think that the ranting really triggers a lot of lower frequency aspects and it creates this toxicity. Anyway, I could go off on that. But to provide her the opportunity to do that and to synthesize it and then to produce something that's valuable, there's an art to that, right? And we've had to just kind of fumble through it with her. But she's been such a phenomenal catalyst in seeing, I mean, that's true for adults, too. It's true for all of us. Like, we just want that space to be able to be who we are. And she's such a pure example of that.
Exactly. Thank you. Actually, like she was saying with the ranting and raving stuff, there was quite a few times. I remember this one time, Mom was just coaching me when we were writing the book. I was sitting in the front room, and I was pacing around, and I was bawling because all this emotion and energy was coming through because I was focusing on being a leader, and that's a hard thing. And I was just so, like, I was ranting about it. I was very emotional about it, but I will not forget that time because that was kind of what tied the book all together, is because I got that moment, but it could tie into making sense.
I am so glad to hear you say that, because that was probably the hardest moment in my existence. Was I just kept hearing to push her and push her and put, and I was like, oh my God, I'm a horrible person. Oh my God, what's happening? And when she broke, oh my gosh. Like,
it cracked wide open.
And what a perfect microcosm of how we are as individuals, right? Mm-hmm. We have to be pushed. We have to be prodded. And we have all those signs around us, sometimes very, you know, obvious, mom and dad or whatever's happening. You get a download, you're ready to go speak to it. But that's a perfect example. We have to go through the storm to get to the other side of it again.
Exactly.
And again and again and again, right? And and that opportunity to grow and evolve is here for all of us. Not everybody is awake and ready to listen.
Well, and she's phenomenal at sound bites. And so, I mean, she's just made for commercials. I mean, like, you turn a camera on, she's like, like, it's just her way. It's just who she is. Yeah. And so we were in the meat and potatoes of the book, like, really this, like, why? Like why, you know, really, it was a section where she was encouraging parents to be more supportive of their kids, because she had had situations where she spoke at events. She's been the speaker at events where kids weren't allowed, you know, and she had parents coming up to her saying, you know, oh, my kids suck compared to you. And she looked at us, she's like, I'm not doing this.
Yeah,
no more.
I
like,
don't want
this
to be
is
that
gross.
Person.
Yeah.
And she's like, that judgment again.
Exactly. And for me, it's like, I even wrote in the book that that's the type of stuff that makes me want to stop, because I'm trying to encourage parents to really support their kids and say, hey, you can make a difference in the world. But then I'm at a business conference, I'm the only kid, or the kid has gone off somewhere and the parent comes up to me and says, my kid sucks compared to you. They don't do anything. They just sit and play shooting games on Xbox.
And they're trying to make that a compliment to you.
But what's so beautiful, and what are they really speaking to, though?
They're speaking to their fear as being a parent, because we can only, like, you are a mirror image of me. So how you're behaving, I can see that within myself. And that's what the parents are telling me. And even though they think it's a compliment, I'm like, I don't know. I want to show you to be nice to your kids and show you to not say that about them, especially not behind their back. Like, that's worse. And I wrote in the book that, no, just be supportive of your kid, because I'm not going to do it anymore if parents keep on coming up to me.
This is such a refreshing conversation. It really is. I've seen, whether it's an adult entrepreneur or a child with supportive parents, and they're putting that child out front to be that entrepreneur, look at him or her and, you know, how great they are. This is real and authentic and raw. All three of you, right? And I obviously, that's what you stand for and stand behind. But you're constantly being observers to yourselves and to the people around you, and holding each other accountable. It's magical. And I love that you spoke to this, because at such a young age, physically, I get that you're much older than that. To see that, to be aware of how the potential you have to impact people positively, but also possibly negatively, and how do you stay in that space to encourage and motivate, inspire, but also give them have the expectation that they clean up their own shit as well, right?
Sure.
And I run in circles where there are folks who have their kiddos at a variety of ages, you know, 8 on up through early 20s, and it's only almost that these children become these puppets platform the right word? Tokens of here's who, kind of like we were talking about in the whole personal development space as well. Here's who I say this child is. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to morph everything, this brand, around this kid or this thing. And then when we really look inside that thing or that, there's no soul left in there, because they become this.
They become a machine.
A machine.
Yeah, well, we do it to ourselves, too.
Exactly. So given that, because I really feel the authenticity and just the love and the compassion and respect and the calling to be something greater than yourselves and invite us all to play. How do you keep each other in check with this?
We've developed everything from a place of, you know, due diligence in all things.
And put it in the middle.
And then self-dominion above all else.
Self-dominion
is that at the very core essence of who you are and how you show up in the world and everything that you experience in life, business, relationships, everything, that you take full ownership at every level, every depth. Even if somebody else's actions, you still have a role in that energetically, and it's taking responsibility down to that level. And so we made a pact as a family that, one, we never go to bed angry.
We never eat angry.
And we don't, you know, we'll be sitting down, and we've all had exciting days, and we sit down, we start eating, and we say it, we give grace, and we start, next thing we're talking, we're eating, we're shoving all this food in our mouth, and Antonio goes, stop. Everybody get back into your body.
Stop eating.
Lower your energy. And then that's connect from that space. And so mealtimes is like that. You know, in conversations, it's like that. If something happens in the midst of it, you know, Tonya will referee for Neva and I. Mm-hmm. I'll referee for Tonya and Eva.
I'll referee for them.
Do you do that?
Oh, yeah. Oh my goodness. She goes, you guys, why are you arguing? We're not arguing.
Do.
When she goes, well, it sounds like you're arguing. You need to figure it out.
Yep.
Well, actually, my favorite example is yesterday. She goes, "Mom, are you judging me because you're wah wah?" I said, "Yep."
She goes,
"Well, that's not nice." I was like, "Nope." Like, I got nothing. Yes. Like, you're right.
Yeah, you called me on it.
That's exactly what it was.
And yesterday, I was kind of becoming the parent. I was telling her, "Stop being wah wah. I'm not going to let you do it. And also, you're judging me because of it. So stop." We just got done doing a video based on that.
Well, what's so fun is that, one, it's having the courage to allow everybody to be in their wholeness. So we don't see it like she's not a half person. You know, she came into this world as a full enlightened being. And we had a choice to allow for that to emerge or to squash mm-hmm. it to suit our purposes. And really, ultimately, that doesn't even serve our purposes.
No.
But the way you asked about the self-dominion, and I would offer a little bit of a reframe, and it's really allowing the divinity of who you are to manage the smaller self.
Mm-hmm.
And that aspect of you isn't going to fight for you to let it come forward. It's not going to battle for your attention. It waits for you to choose it. When you choose it, everything changes.
Well,
everything. That reality we talked about, literally, I mean, things disappear in front of your face. Like, we joke, like, we're big superhero matrixy kind of Avenger people, very woo woo,
my kind of people.
But the reality does reform itself in front of your eyes if you're willing to stare at something and deny its existence. If you're willing to look at where fear has played a role in your existence and say, "No, no more. I'm opting out. I'm getting off the hamster wheel." And allow yourself to sit in the space for a moment, the void, until the new comes forward. That's where the magic happens. But so much of collective consciousness, so much of society, so much of parenting, you know, stories and stuff and marriage. I mean, we constantly are battling the voices of collective consciousness with regard to how we should be interacting as spouses. And we just say no. Like, once mm-hmm. we can see it, you know, once we identify it, you have to take that next step and say no. And I think the personal development communities, the spiritual growth communities have done us a disservice a little bit because it's all about the awareness of it. What's the practice of it? And so, yes, superpower experts, you know, our curriculum is really like, it's kind of the shop us last. Like, you know, I tell people, if I do my job, I'm the last coach you will ever hire. Not because you don't need to keep learning, but because the idea that you need a coach, that I need someone to tell me who I am and what my expertise is and to guide me in it.
Self-dominion.
There's an abdication aspect exactly. to that. And so what we advocate for within Superpower Experts and what we practice in our family, and really this was the petri dish that allowed us to crack the code for collaboration. But you have to be willing to allow everybody to be fully who they are, allow everybody to keep evolving, but you yourself have to bring your wholeness into the collaboration. Otherwise, you're using that collaboration to define yourself, and it's just as toxic as living vicariously through your child.
And the only way you get there is you have to understand the concept that, and you have to have the courage, operate transparently, and know that that transparency piece will foster trust.
But here's the deal: we all know anyway.
Yeah, and that's the thing is to think that you're not energetically putting the consternation or the constriction or the fear into the middle for people to see. We're lying to ourselves, and so mm-hmm. in relationship, you have to be, whether it's business or family, you have to be willing to, one, be transparent and know that I'm not hiding it from you anyways. I'm just not speaking the words.
Yeah, it's not being transparent. It's recognizing the fact that you have no choice but to be transparent. Like, too many people are awakening to their gifts and abilities. Like, I know people broadcast fear. It's so aggravating. It's just like, you're lying. Like they don't know they're lying because they're not even aware that they're broadcasting fear.
They're lying to themselves.
But it's like, I'm not interested in talking to your fear. I have zero desire to have that conversation. And you should too.
I likewise, when we use fear and this, you know, term fearless, or, you know, I can take on everything, that also becomes this crazy platform too, that's empty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Frequently, right? Because fear is part of our existence. We have to be able to go through that again to mm-hmm. get through certain thresholds.
Absolutely.
I don't know if there's a time that I will ever stop being afraid altogether of certain things, most certainly, especially if I am aware of it and I focus on it and I practice it. But I think that's part of our evolution, right?
So the way we explain this is that we all exist in multiple dimensions simultaneously. And as long as we're embodied in a physical body, we've agreed to do that because that's how we connect in, right?
Mm-hmm.
The what we teach people and how we train people is that you can actually detach from your own energy field, because those of us who've awakened to these and decided to be of service and agree to do that work, we are constantly being connected into other spaces because that's what we've agreed to do. However, the internal work is to be able to hold that space for longer periods of time and wider spaces, right? That's the exponential impact. And so you're spot on in the sense that we don't ever lose that as long as we're incarnated. Once you lose that completely, you're back in oneness and game over, right? Tilt. But you don't have to be a victim to it. And so there's something about the playgrounds allowing for the work that you're talking about. But there does come a point when it's like you're not really doing that work for yourself anymore. When you've agreed to do this for the collective, you're the vessel for it. You're the instrument of it. It's like in Doctor Strange, the Ancient One says, you know, we never get rid of our demons. We just learn to live above them. And so the goal isn't to get rid of them. I have people coming to me all the time. And they're like, oh, my gosh, I had the coolest. I remember that conversation you and I had and da-da-da-da-da. And they think they know me. They think they have a relationship with me. But they were using me in the essence of who I am to work through something. I don't have to be present for that. In fact, it's far more powerful when I'm not. Because if I get present to it, now we're enmeshed in it and we're kind of both walking through the garbledygook together and we don't need to. I don't have to be present for that. But we teach people that if we're not, that that's connection. Right? That's how we relate to each other. No, it's toxicity. It's swimming around in misery together. Like, no, thank you. And sure, use me in that regard. I'm big enough. I've done enough work on myself to be able to hold that and carry that with you. And when it becomes clear that there's something I'm still holding or some residual in me that's triggering a fear in me, I get the opportunity to work through that. It's not personal. In fact, it's the least personal thing you'll ever do in your existence. You're doing it for everybody. It becomes very selfish and personal when you refuse to do it.
We call when we go to Burning Man. This year will be our third year. We all have playa names, and so we call her the Ancient One.
The Ancient One, yeah. And the second one.
No, no, I think that.
Wait,
no, this
I think, is no, I think child that
her playa. No, her I'm sorry. Her playa name is Source.
What do you mean when you say playa? What do you mean?
That's where the event. Is
oh, okay,
held.
Right. So yeah. Then you have these names. So,
so I'm Source
and Kid Clarity.
Well, I'm actually Ravage, which I made a mix of Rebel and Savage.
Oh, right. But goodness. She's known as Kid Clarity. So yeah. I'm Source, but I am known as Ancient
yeah.
One.
So we, our inner circles, where everybody refers to her as yeah. Ancient One. And I'm Phoenix. I'm constantly reinventing
Rising.
Myself.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So fun. So you alluded to Burning Man earlier and the role that Neva played. Can you speak to that this last year, yeah. right? Do you and do you expect to have, well, I mean, how are you going into this next Burning Man?
So last year I did Oracle card readings and it was an interesting experience because I had people in tears. I had people very happy. And the hardest part is trying not to go into that energy and have emotion around it because then it's just going to be a whole pity party if it's an emotional card. This year I hopefully will do it again. I probably did around 200 readings.
In a seven-day period.
Yeah. In a seven-day period. It was tiring, but it was so fun, so worth it because I got to meet so many people. We actually, there's Center Camp, so that's where everyone goes. And you can get, like, noon tabs, their electrolyte drinks pretty much, and all that. There's dancers and...
There's naked acro yoga.
Yeah.
You can say
you can
it.
Say it.
naked acro yoga.
That was she's the best self-editor. Oh my gosh, this kid.
I told you it's internet radio. You can use whatever words you like.
She won't
to
let
use.
Herself. She won't let, she'll say she, that, but she won't
no,
curse.
I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Self-edits.
I have my own curse words. but we ran into this most adorable, like, little 2-year-old and her mom. And they were walking around. The mom started talking to dad. The 2-year-old started grabbing my hand. And then the mom said, oh my gosh, you're Kid Clarity. And so the next day, they came and visited me to get an oracle card reading. And I actually did one for the toddler. So that was really fun.
Yeah, we camp at Buddha Camp, which is a phenomenal camp. And she was in the book. So there's a book of all the events. And so she got in the book.
Interesting events.
Yeah, very, very interesting events, huh?
Yes.
If anybody's seen the Burning Man event book. But Kid Clarity was in there also. And so part of what I think thrills us is the juxtaposition of like when she does come into my, like I mentioned, she's gone to events where she was a featured speaker, but kids weren't allowed, you know, and it's a real reconciliation that has to happen internally within her I think on some levels she's very conscious of what she's agreed to do. And then on others, she's very much a 9-year-old person who goes, yeah, screw this. Like, that's not cool.
I don't say that, though.
No, she doesn't.
What would you say?
What do I say for that?
You don't have a good
one. You don't have a good one for that one.
Yeah, not yet.
That word's been changed to freak.
Frick.
Yeah, frick.
And then I have crud.
Crud.
I actually want to say something about Buddha Camp.
Please.
I'm the first kid that's camped there in 15 years.
Well, ever.
Yeah, ever.
Buddha Camp's been around for 15 years.
And it's been around for 15 years.
Yeah, they've opened up the doors to kids now because of her.
And actually, they give out emails. So, hey, get your tickets, all that. And they said that now kids are allowed at Buddha Camp.
Wow, and you're the catalyst for that.
Yeah.
She's pretty much the catalyst for just about
everything.
So
many things.
She came to us at 3 and said, Mom, Dad, I need to be on TV and in movies. And we're like, and you know me, like I'm gonna check in and be like, okay, are we ego? Where are we going with this? Like, what is she talking? Who's she talking to? Who's filling her mind?
What type of movies?
What are you watching on your iPad? We kind of looked at it, and it was from such a pure place. Again, she's 3, but you know, she was doing interesting things at 3. And we just knew it was like, whether or not she's always been consciously aware of it, she has an impact on environments when she goes into them, and starting at CEO Space and kind of impacting that world, and then Burning Man, and then, you know, who knows what's next. But it's, you know, when she got done doing her keynote in front of 2000 plus, I looked at her, I said, so what do you want to do next year for your business? What are your goals? And she goes, oh, well, I'll speak on bigger stages, like 3,000, 4,000. And to her, it was just like, so matter of fact, like, of course she will.
Duh.
Like, she wants to be on Ellen. And I mean, it's just like, there's like, I honestly see her doing a talk show, truthfully, because I
can see that as well.
It's just brilliant. And so it's been such a delight allowing for the unfoldment and just being in it. And her business is such a great, pure experiment, because she's not 50 years old trying to feed kids and pay a mortgage. You know,
like
she doesn't.
I'll sit next to you.
Well, but she doesn't. But she doesn't have those pressures. And so it's like a pure experiment of what happens. Superpower Experts was similar, because we had the corporate counterintelligence firm. We had Vetting Solutions. And from jump, that business, and this was the challenge we undertook, it was self-sufficient the first month and in revenue the second. And that was our prediction. Can you do this? Can you build a business with no capital, no infusion, nothing? Now, we had resources and experience, so that's capital in and of itself. But it can be done. Like, there's all kinds of creative ways to do business now. And so to get to watch this process with her, because it's not overburdened, you know, mm-hmm. it gets to be a free expression. And that's how we treat businesses, exactly. Is they're kind of their own living, breathing entities. You
well,
know?
And to her credit, she does the work.
I do.
And she's set up on project management. She does her chores are on project management. Her homeschool's on project management.
I clip the funny FaceTime images.
Yeah,
she's
podcast. She's embedded in the process, and so the entire podcast is, I mean, it's her energy. And while we have a production team, but she's included in it, and she's there's certain tasks as the host that she has to do, and so she's doing the work, you know, and she's self reflecting on when she's not doing their work or why she's not doing the work. And she'll stop. She goes, you know, I spent too much time on my iPad. I'm going to go read a book. I'm going to go do this. And she's got that level of awareness that she's doing that internal work that, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, you know, what she's doing is because her mom and I. No, her mom and I are just bumpers. She gets to bounce off of her mom and I, and she's the one that it's doing the work. And so, you know, when you read this book, it's, you're like, how is this a 9-year-old? It's 100% her voice, and every message that we've got, I mean, the process that we went through was able to capture it as painful as it might have been at some point.
But it had to be,
but
right.
It had to have been, because she got to that point, and now she's on the other side of it. Now she's on to bigger challenges. She's working with movie producers to make these films, and she's already got another idea for another one. And so it's that level of success comes from your willingness to do that work at that internal level, and that's what she does.
I have this question percolating, and I've had it for a couple of minutes. I'm not sure how to ask it. You'll probably know better than me, so fill in the blanks. Are you almost 9?
I am 9.
I'm sorry, I kept saying 8.
It's okay.
My apologies. You're 9 years into parenting this kiddo. Were you, I know you're ready now, and you continue to be challenged and grow with her, but at what point did you know who she was as a soul in this human experience? And were you both always in sync and ready to help her evolve in the way that you've so magically held her? Or were there times you were like, fuck this, I'm out.
So the Neva's entry into the world, I didn't know I was pregnant. And in fact, I'd been told that I couldn't have kids. And anyway, that wasn't really in the cards. We had discussed, you know, the possibility of pursuing it a couple years before into our marriage.
Like 2 weeks before we got married, we found out.
Well, 2 weeks before we got married. Yeah, we'd been engaged for 6 to 8 months or something. Yeah. And then two weeks before, I was driving back to work. We worked together. You weren't with me. I don't remember why. But anyway, I was driving back to work.
You were meeting me.
And I heard her name. And I was like, oh, well, that's kind of cool. Neva. My grandmother's name was Reva and my mother's name is Nancy. So I'm like, oh, that's cool. That's kind of a neat little thing. And I'm like, wait, hold on. Like, I'm like, I didn't have that thought. Like, wait a second. Where did that come from? Right. And I was like, wait a second. And I just heard very clearly in that moment that she was telling me this. Right. And keep in mind, I mean, we were counterintelligence agents, Army veterans, like, you know, both of us come from pretty traditional conservative upbringings. And it's like, so he and I had a pretty painful, lengthy conversation about it where it
took me about 45 minutes to figure out, like, oh, you think you got it.
Yeah. Well, I was a little bit shooken up by the whole thing. So I wasn't very clear in my communication. I thought he was tracking. And then about 45 minutes into it, he's like, you think you're pregnant? I'm like, about this whole time. Anyway, you know, and then when I was pregnant, we would be walking around and people would stop us and say, you know, do you know who you're carrying? Right. And we're like, and we're looking at each other like, are we birthing Jesus? Like, what is happening here? Like, it was really unnerving. And I mean that in the most respectful, non-sacrilegious way, but it was very challenging. And they would say things like, we were down at Fort Huachuca. So we'd go to Bisbee a lot. And so there are a lot of woo-woo folks.
There, right?
And they'd be like, there's angels and light beings. And we're like, what? Like, is that in the Bible? So, like,
and I think this is why I asked that question, because prior to this, you were coming into yourselves, but right. But not with this
not
amount of clarity.
And you know what? You know what it was for me. For me is, and I don't remember who. I think it was somebody that we met in Bisbee or talking to, and he looked at me as you know, man to man, you know, father to father, and he said, you know, if you don't do what it is you're here to do. And get out of your own way, she's not going to be able to do what she's here to do. And it was like, click. And then it was like at that moment in time when we had already made that commitment to each other when we got married. But now here we're getting ready to bring this being in and people are seeing her before she's even here saying, you want to make sure she's good. You need to deal with your shit. You need to
clear up some things.
Get out of your way and do what you're here to do and follow that path. Because otherwise she's not going to be able to do it. And that for me was like, got it.
Okay.
And I'm, you know, we've been committed to our own evolution ever since.
Well, and you're intuitive in the sense that, like, this is 9 years in the making. And so
doesn't happen overnight.
Right. That's why that judgment is so incredibly unfair, because she's allowed the environment to do this. Not only that, I mean, she was seeing beings. She was freaking out about people coming and talking to her. Like,
deep conversations.
We had to make a choice about, are we going to crush this in her, which most of us have that in our stories, right? We awakened to our gifts as children, but we didn't know what they were. And our parents probably didn't have the constructs to assist with that. We didn't necessarily have the construct, but we looked at each other like, are we going to repeat this or are we going to make a different choice and figure it out? And so we have our relationship. I mean, we're phenomenal partners, Justin and I. We're pretty clear. We've done this many, 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 many times together. So it does serve as a really great foundation. I mean, we really just have all the pieces. And so, you know, I encourage anybody listening, like, don't pit yourselves against that. Like take the, you know, allow it to motivate you, allow it to kind of inspire you. But certainly our situation is unique. And we're very clear that we crafted all of this so that we could show what's possible. But it doesn't mean that you're somehow wrong or less than if you're not doing all of that. Our story isn't for everybody. It's very complex and very elaborate. But take something in it and let it inspire you. Mm-hmm. Our stories aren't, you can't be us. We're us. Go be you. Like, we right. need you to be you. Let us be us. You be you.
Bounce off us.
Watch what happens.
Yeah. Bounce off us and reach out, connect, because we're always happy to have a conversation and reflect exactly. back to you something different.
So how can folks get a hold of you guys? I mean, clearly out on the social media and you've got your own YouTube and several podcasts. Is there a hub? Is there a Reckler Group hub?
So the Reckler Group doesn't have a forward-facing presence on the internet, but you can find us at clearbusinessdirectory.com. superpowerexperts.com or superpowerkids.com. Mm.
You can also go to NevaLeeReckler.com.
Yeah.
Neva Lee, NevaLeeReckler.
Or you can reach out directly, Justin@RecklaGroup.com is my primary contact. Feel free to reach out directly there as well.
But Neva's book is on pre-order, and so Neva Lee Reckler is a great place to go for that one.
Okay, yeah. And then when the hardbound is coming, when do we have a drop date?
We're in final edits. We're probably about a month and a half, 2 months out before we have the book launch.
Come back and have a conversation with me about your book when it's ready.
Oh, we're gonna have a party. And yeah, we're invited.
Good. I want to come. I'll bring my little guy.
So Phoenix, hope you're listening. If you want to come to the launch party, send us a message.
Definitely come.
Definitely. So much fun to be with you today, and really just very rewarding. So thank you. And I'm going to apologize in advance, not that anybody else besides me and you know what questions that we're kind of thinking about to discuss. We didn't hit any of them. But
that's good.
But I always trust that the conversation always takes us where it needs to go. So again, I really appreciate each of you spending your morning with us here at Phoenix Business Radio.
Well, and thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you.
Pleasure. You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X, broadcasting live from the Max 6 and Conscious Capitalism workspace. Some media leans left, some lean right, and we lean business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki.